Jack Sykes, Real Six. I'd like now to look at the preparations for the breakout when that did come. What did you notice, or what part did you play in the preparations?
Well, nothing up really, in the sense that things, as far as signals were concerned, were carried on all the day. You know what I mean? The guns were seemed to be loaded up with ammunition, or getting more and more ammunition on the gun sites and all that, and the compositions and that sort of thing. But as regards to signals, I mean, we packed a few things up, because I think they try to keep it fairly low key, if you know what I mean. Now, in other words, they didn't say, right, lads, tomorrow we're bursting out all over the room. Like, it sort of built up gradually, if you know what I mean. But my role, if you like, is as it always was. I mean, I basically was at the batch headquarters, and I was in touch with brigade, and any orders or any instructions or any information was passed along to me, which I in turn passed to the officer for him to deal with. So in that sense there was no real big build up. We knew that something was coming off because of the message that we kept coming through, although a lot of them were tended to be a few code words and all that, which didn't necessarily have the privilege of knowing. But things like messages, coordinates, trig points, all that kind of thing, you know, they were sort of passed through. And that was it, really, until we actually started the breakout and then the people were all different.
What do you remember of the breakout, then, as you saw it?
Remember that the infantry, which I think was a Scottish regiment, in fact, I know it was a Scottish regiment, but I can't remember which one it was, because one thing I remember is the Piper plane. When we broke out, the guns put down a terrific barrage and were firing and firing and firing, you know, for what seemed like ages. In fact, I have an idea, but you'd have to ask a gunner this, that I think the fire so much that the barrels were heated and they got a few premature explosions, if you know what I mean. The shells went off before they actually should have done sort of thing. So I remember that. I remember us all getting a tot of rum, although I don't drink it, so I haven't done some drugs. And then this terrific barrage. And also, the infantry moving out. I remember getting a lot of gunfire back, and quite a terrific, some terrific amount of that. And it went on for quite a long time, until it suddenly stopped. Everything seemed to stop, just like that, as it were, as if we found the jelly and done all this firing, and then decide he'd got to move for whatever reason and packed up and gone. I don't sound very excited, but no, but it was pretty hairy while it was going on. And of course, all that while I was on the radio all the while. So one of my jobs. Well, as always was, you're on a radio, you've got a pair of headphones on, you've got a microphone in your hand, you're aware of things in a way that are going on, but you're so concentrating on what you're doing, you don't see necessarily all what's going on around you, if you see what I mean. You're so sort of wrapped up in getting all these, you hear things, you see bits and bobs. You weren't out following the infantry and following the guns until we moved. You never put that in a different matter. But that's what I remember mostly about the terrific barrage, the infantry, hearing this Piper plane, and then it going on for, I couldn't tell you how long it went on for, it seemed a hell of a long while, and then it went dead. It just stopped like that. And,
was that before you moved then?
Then,
that it went
then we moved after that.
So
as I recall.
You'd be put into a mobile, into a truck, wouldn't you?
Then we moved into a truck, into you know, the truck that we have the wireless set in. Wireless truck.
What happened after that then?
Well, nothing that I recall. You know, when I say nothing, I mean, we just, that seemed to be it for us. Really, because I think from then on we went back down to get re-equipped, didn't we?
But that's all you remember of the engagement to break out?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't involved in the actual firing or anything like that. It was, as I say, I was on duty all the while, getting orders, receiving orders, passing orders on. I could hear all the ramshackle that was going on, all the noise and everything. But you hear it sort of through the headphones, if you see what I mean. I mean, when you're sitting there, well, sometimes for hours on end, you know what I mean. Because, I mean, there's no time to do anything, to eat or sleep or sometimes go for a pee even, but you know, it's, you're there all the while. I mean, there's nobody to relieve you or to do anything about it.
Now, do you remember the period you were at Timiny? I don't know if that's how you, Timiny. Do you remember being there? That's where you spent Christmas, I think.
Okay.
According to the.
Oh. Where's Timiny? It's not near the prison, is it?
No, further forward. You went forward and then back.
Don't remember that. Sorry.
Fair enough. So you did go back towards Cairo.
Yeah, we went back to Cairo, as I recall, and we went back and we got down near the pyramids and got re-equipped. And then we formed these boxes. They had these, you know, we went down there, got re-equipped and all that.
Did you get any new equipment? As signalers?
Replacement stuff, not anything brand new, nothing.
No new developments.
No new developments, anything like that. Oh no, only the number one sets. I think there were number 11 sets, and those were the wireless sets. The exchanges were the same, as I recall, the fuller phones and the other phones were the same. I didn't get any new equipment.
So there's this period of re-equipment lasted for quite a while, January, February, and also the formation of 520 battery. Now you stayed with 426.
I was with 426.
You didn't move.
No, I was with 426, and I was with. I think we had a new commander, which were, I mean, when we were in Tobruk, we had Gary Burke. And when we came out and went up the next time, we had Major Barber, and I was his assistant.
Signal sergeant
to Major Barber, as opposed to being with Gary when we went to York.
What did you think of Barber as a replacement?
Well, Gary was an exceptional bloke. Barber, I never did get on with very well at all. I think he was a bit of a... I've got to be careful what I'm saying, really, but it was a bit of a dodderer in a way compared with very much of a...
You say he was compared to... Was he all right in himself? I mean, if he hadn't had the Birkin before him, would he have been an adequate officer?
Well, I think he was adequate. I would say he was adequate rather than exceptional, if you will. He was the only bloke I had any arguments with about... What we got up to.
Did these start before you went forward to the box?
No,
or
after.
Well, I will. So, on the 21st of April, it says you move forward towards the box system.
Well, we formed the box system, and, as as I recall, we were with Blood Mending Grants, I think his name was, who was the bloke in charge of the box. I think in the box there were so many artillery, so many infantry, so many tanks, and we moved up in boxes. That seemed to be the...
And your box was the...
Was the one which my father was in, and Colonel Sealer.
So the Knightsbridge box.
And we went up,
So, what do you remember about events that happened in the Knightsbridge box?
Well, when we went up, we sort of fought our way up, and I remember that one of my jumps was, apart from being to, when we went up in this time, I didn't go up in an ordinary wireless truck. We had a converted armoured truck. It was an armoured vehicle without a turret on it, and that was what we had. It was a mobile command post, if you like. And
so were you actually with Barber then?
I was with Barber in that, and in that truck there was a driver. There was a bloke named Dobson, because there was two wirelesses in this truck. One was, which Walter Dobson was in, was through to the regiment, through to the guns, our guns, and I was through to the Tank Corps and to Brigade. And I took orders from either like Brigade, or got in touch with the tanks, depending on what the movements were, passed back orders to Barber, who passed them on to the guns. So if you understand what we're getting at, we had a connection in our, what you might call our mobile command post, where we received either instructions or orders or requests or whatever, saying what the position was. We passed them on, and then that was passed on to the guns for them to do whatever was necessary for them to do, either to move up, take up positions, fire to support infantry or support gun, tanks or whatever.
Now, the first big action that was this action on the 27th of May, when 520 Battery was attacked and 426 was involved as well.
Well, we were, I think, 520 were on our left, if I remember rightly. Who was in charge of 520 Battery? 520, I think, were on our left.
That was P.G. Birkin.
P.G. Birkin, then, yeah. And they were on our left. They took a bit of a hammer on it, as I recall it. And we were in support all the day. I mean, and again, I was sitting in this armoured car with me headphones on, taking the orders, receiving orders, and everything. And the only thing I could see, there's a bit of a slit in the side of the thing, and I could see occasional things that went off, shells exploding, and people passing about, and movement and that. My main job was to stay there all the time.
And what sort of messages were coming through at that time?
Well, only things like movements, where people had to move to, or things like such and such a thing was happening on various areas. Things like ammunition would be coming up and would be going into different places, and that sort of message, I can't remember all of them, obviously, because there were so many, and it was on all the time.
Did your vehicle actually come under fire?
Oh yes, yeah. During the day, I mean, we were there, and during the day, one thing I did see, and I remember, whether it was on the particular day that we're talking about, but on the day that we actually got captured, the Stukas came over. And I looked out, and from what I could see, and there was purple smoke all round us. Now, as I understand it, that was an identification system for the Jerrys. When the Stukas came, they let off the purple smoke. So, because, I mean, it's all flowing and moving, that showed them where their position was, so they wouldn't bomb them. And we, at the time, were surrounded, that was completely surrounded by this.
So that's actually a little later. Yeah, that's moved on to the 6th of... No, it's all right, to the 6th of June.
The 6th of June, because that which was the day I was captured.
That was the day I was... Yeah. But
before that, well, we were involved in... one thing I can remember, just seeing vaguely, and again, it's the days run into one another, so... one day we were firing a lot, and we in 426 we're in a bit of a hollow than anybody else, I think. And I saw these trucks come over the hill, and they were German infantry. And I saw them bailing out. And again, remembering I can't see a lot because I'm looking through. We fired on them, and I think we captured them that night, if I recall.
What you said you had arguments during these days with Barber. What were the arguments about?
When we were moving up, for instance, the kind of thing was that we had a fairly long range range of 4 or 5 miles, perhaps even more. And yet we were sort of following this tank commander about, virtually, and I was in touch with him, and I could have virtually shouted, and I was sort of saying, well, look, you know, there's no need for us to be going around like blue-arse flies following this bloke, because I've got a thing that we're in communication with him anyway. And several times we ended up in the middle of the tank battle, and things like that, you know. I mean, not that that it's a difference to me in a way, but I was sort of saying, well, look, it's not necessary for us to actually be in amongst all these tanks like we are when we've got a long range wireless set where we can communicate anyway. And when you're in the midst of all that and guns popping and everything, your communications on the wireless were very bad, you know. I mean, because of all the row and all the explosions and God knows what was going on.
Was there any other?
It wasn't arguments, it was a matter of, in a sense, it was a matter of.
Was there any other niggles you had with him, you know, about what you should do or not do?
Not really. I don't suppose that. You see, I had a. I suppose I got spoiled with Gary Birkin, where he'd follow him anywhere, where Barber, I think I got the impression, and I could be doing him a grossness, that he didn't seem to know too well what he was really up to. And I'd been with Gary, and we seemed to have a good understanding, and we knew what he'd discuss things with me, and I'd discuss things with him, and we know pretty well what we were doing. Whereas Barber seemed to be going around in a bit of a, not a dance exactly, but you know, without really knowing. Like I say, instead of us stopping, observing, being able to weigh things up and do that, we seem to be following this guy around in his pocket, rather than being where we ought to be, where we could see what's going on, where we're in touch with him with the wireless, and we could give him far better support and that kind of thing. At least that was my
When did you realise the seriousness of the situation on the 4th of June? Because, you know, when the tanks appeared and such like, I mean...
Well, it was... from the messages I got, we seemed to be running out of ammunition. We certainly were running out of armour-piercing ammunition. And that sort of thing, really, you know what I mean. And as I say, we were on the constant bombardment all the while.
Now, it says in the book that you actually took up a position under a burned-out Italian tank with the commander, the armoured car close by. Do you remember that at all?
And we did.
Yes.
Oh, well, there were tanks and all burned-out things all over the place. Certainly, we were probably near them.
But you did used to you d- it, you didn't take the wirelesses out of the truck.
No, I Walter and I stayed in that armored vehicle all the time.
So Barber may have left to set up.
Oh yeah, but we stayed in. We were in. I mean, oh yes, I think he probably got out and went and spoke to Seeley and went and spoke to those people or anything. But we stayed in the truck.
But you wouldn't know anything about that.
No. What he did when he got out of the truck, of course, that was up to him. My job was to stay in there, and I stayed in, what seemed for hours and days on end.
Now, eventually, a shell hit your truck, couldn't. What can you tell us exactly what happened?
Well, I was on. I think it was a bit late in the afternoon, or even towards the evening, and we'd been on. And as I say, I'd been in this vehicle for what seemed like hours and hours and hours, and we'd had all this thing, and I was sitting there, you know, doing what I was supposed to be doing, passing messages, and all of a sudden there was a bloody great bang, and the thing filled with cordite and smoke, and I remember Walter shouting to me, Jack, and I was pretty well sort of half unconscious then, because it turned out that the shell had hit underneath my seat, and I was the one that got the, if you like, the blast of it. And I remember Wally dragging me out and putting me in a slip trench that was near, and leaving me in the bottom of the slip trench.
Were you actually wounded?
Oh yes. That's why in some ways I walk a bit dicky on my feet now. I was wounded in my arms, in my back. And I've got all the blast in my back. And I've got shrapnel in hit about there.
Halfway up the back.
Halfway up the back. I've got some in my knee. And
right knee.
A little bit in there now. All my arms were scratched and bruised, and they're all swelled, and I think that was the result of
the armoured car was out of action, and the radio.
Oh yes, oh well, that put the old kibosh and everything. As I say, and after that, I took no further part in it. Wally dragged me out and put me in the slip trench.
Now, had you, at that point, had you seen that the battery was being overrun? I mean,
you got that. As I say, I don't understand negative all the while, but when you're stuck in a little armoured car and about all you can see is a little slot there, you don't see an awful lot, apart from the fact that you're concentrating all the time on, you know, and you've got headphones on. So you hear things, but you don't hear them because you've got messages coming through as well. But, you know, from what you could see, and as I say, as I saw the smoke, and I saw these, and you could see the things coming nearer and nearer.
The tanks.
Oh, yeah.
You could actually see the joke.
Oh, we see the tanks. Even see what bit I could see, you could see them coming closer over this ridge.
So, late afternoon-ish, you were at the bottom of this slit trench, so you wouldn't know anything else. You wouldn't see the final moments of the battery as it was actually.
Well, not actually. So I seem to remember, and I don't know anybody else to confirm this with you, but I seem to remember somebody dashing around in the car saying, "Former British Square, former British Square," and it was one of the officers. So. What he meant by that exactly, I don't know. But
you don't know who the officer was?
No, it was one that got away out, somebody told me afterwards. I seem to remember that. But remember, the time was feeling very much happy at the time, and I was at the bottom of the bed structure and told me about it.
You were just lying there, up to
you? I just dropped down from the bottom of the structure.
Were you conscious all the time, or were you?
Sort of semi-conscious, yeah. I was conscious enough to remember to bury my revolver, because we, as a sergeant, I carried the revolver and ammunition, and I buried that.
What, can you just explain why?
Why I buried it? Because I didn't want anybody else to get it. You know, I didn't want anybody else to get the revolver and the ammunition, really. I suppose that's what was in my mind.
You mean the Germans?
Yeah, I mean the Germans. Yeah. And so I remember burying them.
So you were expecting to be captured at this stage?
Well, I wasn't too sure what was happening, but from the look of things, it didn't look very, very healthy. Because, I mean, Seeley's tank had got blown up. I think Gratz, there were honey tanks. I mean, there were honey tanks all around the thing. So it got blown up, you know. And, but as I say, I can remember seeing all this devastation as well. He was dragging me out of the armoured car. And the next thing, again, it went all quiet. And the next thing I looked up, and then there's this German officer looking down into the thing. They dragged me out of the slip room. Put it on put it into the back of a captured English vehicle. And I think I told you this before, this German officer said to me, for you the war is over. Now I know you might have heard that before and think it's a joke, but it's the honest truth.
That's actually what he said.
That's exactly what he said. And he got his revolver out, as calmly as I'm talking to him now, and he said, now's the time, if you've got any arms or anything, is to throw them over the side. Because if you're caught with anything, you will be shot. And it was as straightforward and as plain as that. And there was a few of us, including one or two Germans, in this vehicle. And he sort of said, that was it. You know, if we catch you anything, we'll shoot you. No two ways about it. And as luck would have it, I'd already buried them and there anyway, so that was okay.
Did the other British prisoners, did they get rid of theirs at this point? Or had they all...
I can't remember, to be quite honest. I can't remember exactly. I would say, when you've been blown up, you're not too aware of it. I remember that, though, as if it was happened yesterday.
Were you in pain at this point?
I got in more pain afterwards. I think the shock and the actual explosion, it doesn't come on you until a bit later on, and then it starts to hurt where the shrapnel was, and then your arms feel this there. And of course, after that, what they did, they took us back a bit, and then they transferred us from that vehicle into a German vehicle, which was like a lorry. And I travelled in the back of that. And I remember there was like a hammock slung in the back of that with a German on who lost his leg. And we travelled all the night in this, bumping and everything, and this poor devil was moaning and groaning all the time that we were moving. And they took us back.
Were you all wounded, or was it just...
All them in the truck were wounded, and we were taking us back. And the next day, they took us, and we arrived at a tented hospital.
Now, had you had any treatment at all up to this point?
No, none at all. Nothing. I was just as I'd been picked out, you know, clothes all in tatters and as I was then, and treated to.